on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
An example would be like a lot of people, when they get lucid, they get excited and they often wake up from the dream very quickly. So one of the techniques and tasks is to spin in a dream, right? Mm. And so you get lucid and then you start spinning, and that can prolong the dream experience so that you're not as attached to the emotional experience that you have because you're spinning. It kind of disorients you. And then also whatever mechanism spinning is, it keeps you in the dream world for some reason, right? Besides even the emotional connection. So knowing that you can spin in a lucid dream and it'll keep you longer in it, now you can, if you feel like you're waking up or being too excited about something, you can start spinning and it keeps you in the dream world, you know? So that's like a tool of extending the lucid dream experience longer. And a lot of people have naturally figured out how to do that on their own, or they've read something, but then there's a lot of people that don't. So that'd be like a stepping stone taught to you through the game of how to experience a different perspective of lucid dreaming.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I welcome back lucid dreaming expert and author of A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming, Lee Adams, to discuss his latest venture, Project Icarus, which gamifies the lucid dreaming experience by creating a community where participants progress through various challenging tasks in their dreams. Lee explains how this approach can enhance one's lucid dreaming abilities and provide unique insights into the dream experience. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. I'm excited to welcome back Lee Adams to the podcast. Lee was one of my very first guests. He is the author of A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming. He has been actively researching, practicing, and teaching lucid dreaming for over 20 years. Lee, welcome back to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thanks for having me, Nick. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Well, it's been a very long time. I think you were episode number 3 or 4. I forget. I think number 3, actually. So it's been a couple years. Yeah. I don't even know what episode this is going to be. It's over 150. I know that. So what have you been up to since the last time we spoke?
Doing pretty much the same thing, focusing really in on dreams, trying to understand different aspects of dreams, what's going on in the back end of people's minds, trying to find if there's structure to dreams, that kind of thing, and starting new projects. That's pretty much my MO, is always working on the next thing.
Right. Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you back on is because one of the projects that you've got going seems to be really interesting, and this is the Project Icarus. And yeah, I was wondering if you could tell me kind of what that is and what it's all about.
Yeah. So I've had multiple dream groups where people can come in and discuss their dreams, things like that. And none of them really have taken off in the past. I think it was primarily because I just focused so much on just dream, like the dream content, and not really like community engagement, things like that. And, you know, one thing that's a problem with dreams is that it happens at night and you can't really interact with people in that environment very well. So they're kind of dead ends, but I decided to try something different with lucid dreaming that isn't typically done, is turn into like a gamification. Mm-hmm. So like a game where people can take part in the community, learn how to lucid dream. And then if they are capable of lucid dreaming or are already capable of lucid dreaming at that point, they can be engaged with this dream experience where they are given a set of tasks. So it starts out very basic, certain tasks that you do in lucid dreams. And then once you complete one of the tasks, then you get that marked off. And then eventually you move on to the next set of tasks, which is the next tier level. So they progressively get more and more challenging, as they also teach you like different aspects of dreams and how to use dreams in different ways. So I kind of modeled it based off of my 20 plus years of lucid dreaming and experiences and experiments that I've done in dreams, as well as observing other people's experiences, and developed it based off of that as to more and more challenging, more and more in-depth type of experiences. And it's interesting because all that those reports that people generate for dream experiences also gives the developers of this game, I'm one of the developers, an interesting perspective into dream experiences, because you have people not able to see other people's reports. Essentially, they're anonymous reports. At least we see the data, we see who it is, but at the same time, nobody else does. So you can't really talk. We made it so you can't talk to other users inside the game about the task and what you experience. So it's very like kind of private. So we get the dream experience, and then say somebody else reports a dream experience. Well, we see the data, they don't see it, so they don't know what the other people are experiencing, but we can see the commonalities between the people based on this very specific task. So it gives the developers a very unique insight into the dream experience, because it's set up kind of almost like a scientific experiment in a way. It's not like officially an experiment or anything like that through a university or anything, but it is in a way data collection and seeing a different perspective of dream experiences than you would typically get from like online stuff. So, and anybody that understands like experiment development, nobody's primed on what to really expect in the game. So they're given a task. It's kind of generalized what the task is, and then they have the experience, and then they report it. But as the game has developed, we've kind of changed some of the content around and stuff like that. So it's kind of evolving too at the same time. So one user that takes part in the game may not have the exact same experience too as the previous people, because we may have changed some things to look into different areas and see how it's going to evolve over time. So in a way, summarize, it's kind of like a community, primary community to help people lucid dream, share dream experiences, get involved in that kind of engagement, be very excited about dream content and working with it. And we have experienced people in there that can help kind of analyze and being different perspectives on dream content and things like that, and help people experience dreams from different perspectives. And we're pretty open to different perspectives on things. And then inside of all that is a game, and people can have some pretty interesting experiences if they progress through this game. So yeah, it's really
Okay.
interesting, I think, to me.
All right. Well, let me ask some questions just to get some greater clarity here
Yeah, sure.
on how this is working. So I know that there's a Discord server. So the
Yeah.
game is on the Discord server.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's structured through Discord, which is like a kind of like a chat system for gamers and stuff.
Okay. And so the entry level, then, once you get access to the Discord server for Project Icarus, is you would, to begin, you would start sharing dreams.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it depends if you're a lucid dreamer or not. So if you
Okay.
don't have those experiences yet, then you can select an option to be engaged with people that would help you become better at lucid dreaming. Or you can select another type of role that would allow you to take part in the game, or you can do both at the same time. So you can get the task, you can be like, oh, what is the first task? Okay, can I do that? Or
Right.
maybe that's what I should focus on.
All right. And so the task is something that you would do within the lucid dream.
Right. So you go to
Okay.
sleep, and then you would be lucid and aware in your dream, and then you would remember whatever the task is to do in the lucid dream. It's just, the basic one would be like look at your hands or something like that, right? And you're like,
Right.
oh, I looked at my hands and this is what I experienced. So it starts off very basic,
Okay.
general lucid dream things that people do.
Okay. All right. And what is, how many, do you have a set number of levels? Is there,
When does the game come to an end? Does the game come to an
Yeah,
end?
it's a great question. So there's a little mystery involved with the game itself. So we don't tell people what really the main purpose of the project is. So there's a mystery of like, what is this project? And through people advancing through the levels, they get some of the data on why this is happening, you know, what the tasks are for and what it's leading to. Eventually, it becomes pretty clear what is happening here and what it's geared towards doing at some
Okay.
point. Right now we have 7 tiers.
Okay.
So, and each tier may have multiple tasks inside of it, and those 7 tiers may advance to like another 3, so 10 total tiers. And but we're still kind of developing those last 3 tiers and deciding if that's something we're going to do. But
Right.
when the project ends, we don't know if the project will end because it's kind of morphing to other things as it continues. But at the same time, it definitely has like a focus and a reason of the project being made in the first place. So something may morph out of it. And a lot of people ask, like, hey, is this community going to go away once the project's done? And so, in that sense, like, we don't know if the project's going to be done, when it's going to be done. And the community won't go away, even if no longer the experiment's no longer running. So the community will still exist.
Okay. So it sounds like there is a, how do I want to describe this? That you've got the game itself and the participants in the game, but it's almost like you've got this group of scientists in the background that are observing the players in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, somebody in the community actually posted a reference to a TV show called OA, Original
Oh,
Angel,
yeah.
and it's on Netflix. And I rewatched like the show because I was like, oh, what is this all about, you know? And they actually had a game in it, you know, where they were studying people's dreams and stuff, and it led to other things. And I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting, you know? So in a way, like, they kind of were doing the same thing, you know. They had an entry game that they were collecting people's data with, and then that made them realize like some people that had potentials to do certain things, and then they used those people with potential to figure out some underlying aspect of their reality, you know. And I would say, without giving like spoilers away, that's very like very close to what's happening here. So yeah, so it's interesting, you know, art mimicking reality in some ways, or you know.
But I hope that you're not doing the interpretive dance.
No, you know, in understanding like dreams and stuff like that, in this strangely unique perspective, you start seeing structure to it that is uninterpreted. You know, it's clear, it's easy to see. Anybody would be able to see it, if as long as you kind of just showed the data in a very structured pattern, you know. You're like, here it is again, here it is again. And it's interesting because, you know, we live in a world where we think dreams are, some people, you know, still think the dreams are like random noise that just is being computed at the end of the day or whatever. And just by this project alone, I could absolutely show without a shadow of a doubt that's not true, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of cool, you know.
For sure. Well, and the interpretive dance reference was to the OA itself, not just
Oh, I see what you're saying.
the
No, we're not doing any like movements or anything. We're
It
not doing
wasn't quite
that.
interpretive dance, but they did
Yeah,
have that strange thing that they were doing.
it definitely is a yeah.
That was me being
Okay.
snarky. So that's interesting. So and I know that you don't want to give too much away, but you've got the game and there's a mystery to the game. But then what's the end goal for the developers, for the people, for the those who are behind the scenes?
The developers are invested because they understand at least where the project's going. So in order to be a developer, kind of, you know, you have to be in a way invited by the other developers. And also your data is worthless, essentially. Like, I still report my data, and like the other developer does too, but it's taken in context of like, yeah, this person already understands like how this is going to go, you know? And there's a point where it doesn't matter if you really understood it or not, but the problem, you know, is the double blind kind of aspect to it, you know? It's like if you, or the priming at least, is like they already kind of know, so they may have a direction to go. But oddly, like some of the stuff that I initially set up into the experiment, we could modify it because it no longer was important to prove that that was like a thing. And then we could prime the users to have an experiment or experience. And it was like a shortcut, actually, in a way. So, like, an example would be like, hey, do this task and have this experience. And then you find out that everyone generally has that experience, but some people don't. And then you realize that enough people are having it that it's so common, it's just a misunderstanding from those people that didn't what you're kind of going for. So they don't really like pick up on it. So it's like, what did you see? But they saw it, but they didn't see it, you know? They didn't really pay attention to that. But then if you give them a little bit of like information, then it appears like clear as day. And so you're like, okay, well, I already know it exists, so I don't really need to sit there and like have this not prime people. I just prime them and they'll have the experience. So it was easy as that.
All right. So the players in the game, my assumption here is that they will get better at lucid dreaming by playing the game.
I mean, it's interesting because it's kind of running through experiences that I've had that have, in a way, in my perspective, progressed in some ways, right? It's like, oh, I learned how to do this aspect of lucid dreaming and had this control, and it brought me to this place. And then I continually go to that place over and over again. And then what, you know? And so then it brings you to this other aspect that's commonly happens to people. It's just not easily identified. So then you can, it's kind of like a stepping stone, you know, like once you get to the stone, then you have like a something to step on, and then now you can do other things. So the game essentially putting out stepping stones for you to step on so that eventually you can do things further into the dream experience that it would be a lot more difficult to do, I think, without some help, you know.
And that's what I was just thinking, is that it seems like it would be really helpful to, if you've got an interest in lucid dreaming, to do something like this, because it's giving you techniques, perhaps tasks, as you call them, that will help and kind of lead you through. So I imagine this is all based on the research of the lucid dream experiences and
An example would be like a lot of people, when they get lucid, they get excited and they often wake up from the dream very quickly. So one of the techniques and tasks is to spin in a dream, right? And so you get lucid and then you start spinning. And that can prolong the dream experience so that you're not as attached to the emotional experience that you have because you're spinning. It kind of disorients you. And then also whatever mechanism spinning is, it keeps you in the dream world for some reason, right? Besides even the emotional connection. So knowing that you can spin in a lucid dream and it'll keep you longer in it, now you can, if you feel like you're waking up or being too excited about something, you can start spinning and it keeps you in the dream world, you know. So that's like a tool of extending the lucid dream experience longer. And a lot of people have naturally figured out how to do that on their own, or they've read something, but then there's a lot of people that don't. So that'd be like a stepping stone taught to you through the game of how to experience a different perspective of lucid dreaming. And all these are, you know, it's not like these are the correct way to experience dreams. It's allowing you to experience dreams in a very, in a certain way. Not to say that that's the way, you know, that's the primary way of doing it. It's your dreams are your dreams, but these are just tools to help you learn how to experience it in a very specific way.
Okay. Yeah, because one of the issues that I have with lucid dreams. And I also want to thank you because in your book, one of the recommendations that you had was, and it was a supplement, was galantamine.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to the lucid dreaming state with galantamine.
Okay.
But my problem has been not necessarily waking up, but maintaining the lucidity within the dream, because I end up just like off into dreamland where I don't have that lucidity or that control.
That just comes with experience to kind of emotionally be able to disconnect yourself from whatever's happening to you around. I think the emotional aspects of dreams is what pulls you back into like essentially the dream. Once you get like, oh, I'm engaged with the whatever's happening here. Oddly observer in a lot of my dreams. So I'm not really partaking unless they're the high anxiety, terrifying type dreams. If there's high anxiety, then I'm a participant in it. But if I'm pretty neutral, then I don't really feel anything. So then I'm just kind of observing the things that are happening around me. And then so if I'm lucid, then it's very similar in the sense that like I don't really get engaged with whatever's happening in the lucid dream. I'm more observing it and then able to move through it, and change it in different ways. And that seems to be a commonality for people that are very skilled lucid dreamers. They're kind of emotionally removed from the experience and it allows them to stay in the observing it more versus like engaging in the dream.
Okay. Now I'm finding this really interesting, and because the way you're describing it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so I'm trying to think how I want to say this, because as I'm speaking, I've also got the thoughts going on that often in my dreams, I feel like I'm observing the dream, that I'm not necessarily in it. But it's still my dream, and I still see it as relevant. But I'm not really a participant, but I'm also not lucid. So is what you're describing is that same sort of idea, but you have the lucidity that you recognize that what you're saying is a dream.
That's difficult. I don't really have a great answer to like why, what creates the lucidity in the dream experience besides just awareness itself and practicing awareness throughout your day, and then having that transfer into like a dream experience too.
Okay, now, so these tasks are tasks that you would do in the dream, but what you just said, I know that there are things that you can do throughout the day, like, look at your hand or look at a clock and then turn around and look away. Do you have any tasks for waking life for people?
Yeah, I mean the introductory type stuff to get you lucid and also like to build on lucidity, those are, what you call reality checks is what you're kind of talking about. And those are great and all. The thing that I recently kind of discovered is like the emotional connection to reality checks. So like moments of awareness. So I call it epiphany. A lot of times when, I can only speak freely from my experience is a lot of times when I have a moment of awareness in waking life, it feels like an epiphany where I'm like, oh, wow, like I didn't realize that it's been there the entire time in front of me. And that feeling of epiphany in the waking life is the same feeling I get spontaneously in lucidity in dreams. So, like, I'll be in a dream and then suddenly, oh, it dawns on me. I have an epiphany of, oh, this is not real. This is in my mind, or this is a dream. And I can now step outside of the dream and do what I want to do. So I think really focusing on the epiphany feeling would be a while doing reality checks. It's probably a very powerful technique that people should use.
All right. Yeah, I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me, actually.
And emotionally feel that epiphany feeling, like the actual feeling of the epiphany, not necessarily like the event that took place in order to make you have awareness. So like you can separate the feeling of the epiphany from the event that took place in order to make you feel that, and then just focus on the epiphany feeling itself to kind of build that up so that when it happens in a dream, maybe you're more sensitive to it, that feeling, or you can induce that feeling easier and then the epiphany will give you the realization that you're lucid.
Okay.
That
All
seems
right.
to be very effective for a lot of people.
All right. Yeah, that just the analogy there makes a lot of sense to me, because the having an epiphany is almost kind of like awakening in
Yeah,
a
you're like,
sense.
wow,
So,
I
yeah.
didn't see that. It's
Right,
right
right.
there.
Yeah, so yeah, no, I appreciate that. One of the questions I had, so I was in the Discord looking around, and one of the things I noted was there was this section, I think it was maybe in a FAQ or something about what the lucid dreaming is. And I just wanted to ask about, to get more comment on this, I guess, because you noted, or it was written, out of body experiences, astral projection, reality shifting, and deep meditative states like samadhi are all aspects of being lucid while dreaming. We include all those aspects as a state of lucid dreaming and are part of Project Icarus. So I'm curious about this. How do these other things actually fit in? How are they states of lucid dreaming?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't like that because they like to think that, these other experiences aren't somehow dreaming, like somehow dreaming isn't something profound by itself, So they want to make these other things much more special, I think, then, and they're all special to me, for one, so it's not taking away anything. But the basic definition of lucid dreaming is being aware while you're dreaming, or having some sense of awareness while you're dreaming. And there's varying degrees of awareness while you're aware. We're aware supposedly while we're awake, but then we have various degrees of being aware, and what of being awake are we aware of, but we're still awake and we're still considered aware. So I'd say there's varying degrees of lucidity in lucid dreaming as well, right? And but when you are technically asleep, right, you're laying there, your nervous system is somewhat disjointed from physical experiences, and you're getting internal experience as waking experience, like it's shifted, then you're technically asleep, right? And then bringing awareness into that, then you would be lucid dreaming, right? So yeah, an out of body experience is somebody that's asleep, and they're somewhat aware, right? So they're lucid dreaming. And person that's astral projecting, whatever they want to define that as, is clearly asleep in some form, right? And they're aware, right, of some at some degree. And if somebody is in a deep meditative state, they technically are asleep, right? And they're somewhat aware, right? So they're still lucid dreaming. And there's all varying degrees of that, of course. But people, anybody that's really studied deep meditative states, for the samadhi one, is that's what they're trying to do, essentially, when you get down to it, is they're trying to make it so their body goes to sleep and their mind's awake, right? And anybody that's done anything or experienced that can tell you that it's exactly the same as lucid dreaming. It's you generally don't see the same imagery, or you may have different control or different awareness levels in that, but it's very similar, a very similar experience, very similar to like hypnagogia, really, which is technically, dreaming too. It's a phase between being awake and dreaming, so it's almost like an in-between state. So it's like you're not really dreaming, you're not really awake even. I don't
Yeah.
know if you know you call that lucid dreaming, but a
Right.
lot of people do. So to keep it easy, we just collected all
Okay.
those varying degrees of definitions and put them into one. Because when you get in these communities, especially like lucid dream communities and things, and people start talking about astral projection and out of body experiences, the definitions get very subjective,
Okay.
and everyone just fights about them,
Yeah.
really, because they're like, oh, you're not astral projecting, I'm doing that, and it's like, okay, let's get on the
Yeah.
same page here, like, what's the definition we're all going to agree to?
Right. Yeah. The internet, social media, it's just been designed to argue.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
it wasn't designed for that, but that's what we do. But yeah, I can understand to some extent, because when I think of having an out-of-body experience or astral projection, and I don't necessarily see a difference between those two things, that I don't necessarily think of it as being asleep, but I can see how it does fit that requirement because your body is going to be in that state of deep relaxation, but your mind is active, and that's kind of what's projecting out.
And authors like Robert Bruce, he talked about how he would have an out-of-body experience, and he'd look over and he'd see somebody, and they were out of their body, but they were asleep. So they're dreaming out of their body. And he was confused about that because he's like, well, they are out of the body, but they don't remember being out of their body. And then I asked them, what were they doing? And they said they were dreaming, and it's like, or he could go interact with them. He could see their dream, this is what he says. So even in his like world, and he wrote Astral Dynamics, he's still talking about the same thing, as like, oh, this person, is dreaming while they're out of body and per astral projecting at the same time. And in my mind, that if all those things are true, then that kind of makes sense, is like we're actually always in these different states. We're not in one state, but so we're dreaming, we're astral projecting, and we're out of body all at the same time. And depending on what layer we're in, then even if there is a layer, whatever that means, then we define it as one or the other, but it's all tied to being, the requirement is essentially to remember any of this, you have to be asleep, and aware. So it's like, okay, we're all lucid dreaming,
Well, and I don't know if you can answer this question. It may be part of the mysteries, but you had mentioned the author who had experience, he had a lucid dream and he saw other dreamers. And the question that came to mind when you mentioned that was about other people in the lucid dream experience. I had Sean McNamara on a while back, who's written on astral projection and so on and so forth. And he has had experiences where, he doesn't identify it necessarily as a dream state, but that he has come across other people who are astrally projecting at the same time. And I'm curious if there's anything about interacting with either other lucid dreamers or these dream figures. I don't know if that's the appropriate way to describe them, but if there's anything within the game that addresses that.
Well, I've had those experiences too. So lots of them, they're very confusing because typically there's no real way to prove that like those people exist in some form. It's like, who are you? And they tell your name and stuff. You're like, okay, I don't know, where are you from? And maybe you can get some details all the way down, which I have. And even then it's like, I use the tool that I have is like Google, and try to find this person, and I'm like, I don't know where they're at, and some of the information, even though it's so hyper realistic, it's still confusing. It's like, okay, some of it doesn't make sense, sometimes it does make sense a little bit, and then you're like, okay, maybe this is it, but it's to me it's very confusing. But in terms of like the game and stuff, I'd say that's probably reaching into the area of like, you'd have to find out, like where this game is going, I mean, we do try to keep it pretty, like we don't want people to go insane, for one. So like we don't really necessarily put any belief systems in anybody's mind. There are users in the community that will clearly do that for you, if you want to listen to them. We're open in the community for people to speak their minds and have the views that they want to have, That's a community. You gotta take the good for the bad or whatever, and everyone's gonna be different. But at the same time, like I have my own views, and I try to keep it pretty stable for people. I don't want people going bananas on me, and I don't want to cause anybody harm in this. It's, having this, it's supposed to be a game, but it definitely, the game is pushing the boundaries of like what lucid dreaming is and what people are capable of doing for sure. But you would have to work up the tears in order to figure that one out.
Yeah, well, and I understand that you're going to keep a lot close to your chest here because, and you're, I imagine I already know your answer to this because when I asked about interacting with the other, other characters in the dream, and as you were giving your response, I'm like, oh, well, what about the other players? Can't you just have a task where the other players meet in a dream and then verify something within that dream?
Yeah, there's like some fun. The community is kind of made like a tribe in a way, you know. So they have like some jokes about that, like other players meeting up or community members meeting up with each other in dream spaces, things like that. But the project, we don't discuss anything like about the project outside of like the tier system. So I can't really. There is an FAQ and an intro. Everyone's pretty locked up, you know, like they won't give anything away.
It's a mystery tradition. You've got a mystery school going on. And I can't get the answers until I've been initiated into the mysteries.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
There's nothing,
exactly what's happening.
there's nothing I would ever ask any of the people in the community to do that I haven't already done many times, as well as other people. And then there's nothing in there that you have to do any weird ritual or anything like that to be part of the community. No one will ask you for money. Actually, in the community, if you perform the task, you actually get paid what's called Icarus coins. And then eventually you can exchange those if you get enough for actual real money if you want, or you can buy items and stuff for free in the community. So that's kind of cool, you know, if you get a little bit of reward for doing it too, not just like the mystery school stuff. You get that. And there's no like religious dogma or of any kind attached to any of this either. We keep it pretty clean. People have reviewed it, people go through it, and then we edit it if they have any confusion or anything that they thought was like, oh, I don't know about this. This is kind of weird, you know? Then we edit it, make sure it's like pretty neutral for people, for everyone that we can. You know, keep it game like, you know, fun, you know.
Well, it sounds fun, and it's I'm getting more and more intrigued as we talk because I want the answers to the mysteries. But I do want to go back to that list of things that were also considered lucid dreaming because this one I don't know exactly what your the meaning here, reality shifting.
That's like a trendy new term that a lot of younger people have been using. I think maybe it came up with like kind of the Marvel movement, you know, with these multiple realities, multiverse kind of timeline shift and things like that. So a lot of new, you know, newer kids and stuff, the newer demographics kind of are really into that, you know, of like, oh, are there multiple realities, multiple timelines? Is timeline shifting a thing? You know, and they really are into it, you know, like they're full on in. And I'm not so much really on that side, you know, of things, but at the same times, I'm pretty open to so, but I wanted to include that as like an aspect of lucid dreaming because they do imply that, you know, the reality shifting occurs when you're in these lucid dream states, and then you go through these, you know, experiences, and then you're in some other timeline, and then you come out, and no, everything's different, you know. So, you know, you still have some type of awareness in the dream in order to do what they're kind of implying. So that's why we include it in there. It's also like a good Google search term that will bring up my website. You know, anybody that can do that kind of stuff is a lucid dreamer. So I would like them to be part of the game, you know, like, yeah, we need users.
Well, it's, and I don't remember, it's been a while that since I've reviewed our previous conversation, but one of the things that really interests me about lucid dreaming is just what it has to say about consciousness in general. And
By itself, it's like a really powerful, unique thing that is like, you know, even if there's no like deeper mystery or whatever you want to call it to like humanity and all these things that, you know, I personally believe that there is, and many other people do too. But in the sense, you know, like say it's all just human brain, you know, making all this up, it's like, wow, what is that? You know, like, why do we have the space in our minds where we can become aware in it and then do all these amazing things in it? It's like, that's really bizarre. And I don't know, like, the, you know, looking into like evolution and materialism, really, it's like, I don't know what that's for, you know, like, why would that, is that just some weird thing that just happened in nature? It just seems too perfect for me to think that, you know, it's like, it's just bizarre. So,
Well, consciousness is a mystery in many ways, you know, and I personally don't subscribe to the idea that it is generated by the brain. But it seems to me that exploring lucid dreaming can actually help us get a better idea of what exactly this thing is, this anomaly of sorts that we still don't have a good answer for.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it'll help you see that the mind is much more complicated than what we're generally being told about it. And you know, it's almost hard to talk to people that don't have the similar experiences or not have had those before, because they live in such a different perspective, like in, you know, in some sense, a narrow perspective of what the human mind is capable of, that they really just don't get it, you know. And trying to convey that as like some type of, first they probably won't believe you, you know. And it's like, okay, there's lots of people besides me that can do this, you know, and they all say the same thing. So, you know, like, it wasn't until Steven Lindbergh's, like, not very long ago, proved that lucid dreaming existed, you know. And it's like, how long has this been going on, you know, for, you know, as long as humans have been around, probably, maybe before, you know, if that is even a thing. You know, it's like, how long have we been able to lucid dream and now we just prove that it exists? You know, it's like, okay, guys, I'm kind of over it, you know.
And that's just from a Western perspective, because I know that we spoke before about the Tibetans and they have dream yoga. And I don't know how far back that goes, but they certainly have been exploring these states of consciousness.
Yeah, I'd imagine like Steven Berg going over to them and being like, I proved it. I proved that lucid dreaming is real. They'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, like, you're crazy. Yeah, I mean, you know, there, if you wait for, like, in my perspective, sometimes if you wait for science to prove things, you're going to be long gone and dead before that happens. So sometimes listening to people's experiences and your own can have a lot of value to like the direction that you want to go into, you know.
And I think there are a lot of good objections, but people, you know, it's like, well, it's the brain's generating. But like what you pointed out, it's like, what is the evolutionary advantage of this? You know,
And you know, the I still speak from like neurological perspectives, even as poorly as I understand them. And I think that's generally everybody, but I still speak from a brain perspective for a lot of things, because that's kind of how we experience it, you know. So say like it's not generated by the brain, right? And it's not local to us. The interface, the hardware that's still interfacing, is the brain, right? And so, like, if we speak from that perspective, but don't limit it to that, then we can communicate, you know, about some of these experiences. So, like, dreams are absolutely, in my perspective, structural to the human brain and body. So, and it's very, people have common experiences in dreams and lucid dreams to show structure of the human brain. And yogis will say the same thing. Like, there's eight yoga sutras, and they align perfectly to the structure of the human brain and the regions that is affected by those yogas. So they knew that. If you go into like Kriya Yoga and things like that, a lot of the more recent Kriya Yogis, they'll talk about neurology and limbic aspects of the human brain and how those places in the brain are actually associated with these experiences and imagery, and they even sometimes are symbolically structured to show neurology, you know. And it's like, okay. And a lot of people, you'll find online stuff where they're like, look at the eye in the Egyptian, artwork. It's
Right.
the eye of Horus. It's clearly the limbic, structure in the brain, and the I think it's like the gyrus or whatever structure. I can't pronounce the first name of it. Anyways, and it's like, yeah, like of course, like that's how we experience this. And it somehow it's amazing to people that like you can see inside your mind, but that's how we see, It's like everything is structured by in here and how we see the world from that. Why wouldn't we see that structure, So in a way we're taking internal and projecting it externally, not just in the re reality itself, but also in the dream experience. So, and you can find that in dream content. So like the dream interpretation is kind of, it's interesting as it has structure to it. Like you can kind of interpret people's dreams and experiences, but you can also interpret the dream experience from what structure is being activated in the dream. And you can see that as they sometimes progress through a dream or even just get stuck in one place. It's like they're walking through almost neurologically inside of their brain at different places and different regions. It's very fascinating in that perspective. But I love talking about it from that perspective because it's grounding, versus like if you're like, well, nothing's local to the brain, then it's all this stuff. It's like, well, anything goes then, because nothing's structured. It's like it's just data. You can make up anything you want, at that point, because then we don't have a common real experience because it's just information. But once it hits the brain, then it's structured, and then that's how we experience it,
Well, the brain definitely plays a part. I mean, we can't deny that. You can't deny the part. The question is, what part does it play? Is it because what we have are correlations, essentially. But no evidence of causation, as far as I know. One of the questions I have for you is about the title itself, Project Icarus. Why did you choose that title?
I don't really know, to be honest with you, but I was thinking about, I really do pay attention to kind of intuition sometimes. And I do like Greek mythology, and I clearly knew the story of Icarus. A lot of people misunderstand Icarus as being like he flew too close to the sun and then he fell because of that, but it was both too close to the water and too close to the sun. So you can't go too low and you can't go too high. You need to be right in between, in this space, this liminal space, in order to really be okay, and to fly, And I think flying is part of it, because humans being able to fly is common in lucid dreams, like that's one of the first things that people I think do. We're obsessed with air, and being able to float, things like that. And also discovery of that liminal space is an important part of being aware and kind of engaging with lucidity better. So like the liminal space would be like hypnagogia, and hypnagogia is considered like the gateway to lucid dreaming because it's an in-between state where if you can hold on to it long enough, you don't get too high or too low, it will pull you into a conscious dream experience fully from being awake to the dream. And not a lot of people that I know have experienced that. I've experienced it a few times. It's feel very difficult for me, but some people can do it very well, and they're gifted or whatever you want to call that. But I think everyone is, anybody that's serious about lucid dreaming will try to understand that in between space and move to it. So I think the project Icarus and the name Icarus is associated with that in many ways, and also, being grounded but also not at the same time, and like let's see where this goes kind of thing,
That makes a lot of sense to me because, and that actually goes to what I had mentioned earlier that I have a difficulty in maintaining the lucid dream. And it does feel like going too low or too high when I'm pulled out of the dream.
I'm the same way, you know, it happens to everybody. And, you know, and also like being in control of the dream, you know, is a big one too. It's like too high almost, where you think that you're in control of it, and then the next thing you know, it spins out of control and things like that. Or being too grounded where, oh, the dream's completely in control of me, you know, being lucid and then being in that world, and then suddenly it spins out of control too. So you have to play both worlds at the same time, you know. And I think that's the story of Icarus, kind of.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I like that. But I was curious because I
Isn't
was
he like
guilty
trying to
of.
escape from a prison too with his father or something?
Well, his father is the one, if I remember right, it was Daedalus, and he had, yes, I think that's what they did. They were escaping, and I remember that Daedalus is the one that constructed the labyrinth that the Minotaur was in.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember why they were imprisoned though. They probably angered some god or goddess along the way. Yeah, that's usually what happens. You can't pacify any of them. Oh, a little bit, I suppose. So I know that we're running out of time, getting close to the end here, but let me ask you just a couple more questions. You had mentioned interpretation. Is there, and this is maybe a little bit off the, I know that there are people, I think that you said in the game that in the Discord that can actually help with some of the interpretation. Is there, how do I had this in mind what I was going to say. Do you interpret lucid dreams any differently than non-lucid dreams?
Well, I mean, I don't really spend a lot of time interpreting dreams just because I don't know, I don't really find that super like a big use of my time, I guess, anymore. But I mean, for myself, I write down my dreams and look at them and I'm like, wow, like I didn't realize what I was doing kind of there, and the symbology is so well constructed sometimes. It's just like mind-boggling of how it's all put together. But the lucid dreams are unique in the sense that you have awareness in a dream space, so you can kind of engage with the symbols in the content that you're presented in some fashion, you know, with some awareness. And I think it does change the experience quite dramatically. And it m probably makes it so it's hard to interpret because I can kind of change, I guess, you know. Whereas like when you're a passive receiver of all the symbols and everything, it kind of seems easier to see it as just dream content, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, that has some meaning about whatever is going on. But my perspective definitely has changed on the whole thing of like interpretation of dreams and stuff. Essentially, I dumb it down to like neurology in a way. Is, you know, Jung said dreams are the current psyche state. And I'd say he was wrong that dreams are actually the past psyche state. So, like, you woke up from a dream. So that already happened, right? So it's not where you are right now, it's where you have been. And so, and he also implied that some dreams don't need to be interpreted, you know, just having the dream experience is enough. And I do agree with that. I think just having the experience is actually enough. I think about it as like ringing a bell in a way now. So like you ring a bell and then there's a vibration of the sound afterwards, and that vibration is actually dream content. It eventually turns into like the ringing of the bell is actually neurologic, right? So you're like activating a certain part of your brain. And it rings essentially, and it vibrates a frequency of energy, and then that energy turns into dream content. It's interpreted by your brain as dream content, and then you wake up and you go, "Oh, I had this dream," and it was all put together, you know, in this format. But the point is ringing the bell because that is what is generating all that, you know. So it's already done. So like you and understanding why the bell was rung or what the content of it was is kind of, it still rang, you know? So it's not like it's going to change anything about it being ring. It already happened. But what you can do is you can learn from that and then engage with it next time. So you can bring awareness in and then not engage with it or choose to engage with it, how you want to engage with it. So like I think PTSD and fear is aspects is a big part. So you have, say you have a nightmare and it really shook you up, you know, in the day. You wake up and you're like, oh wow, that was horrific. Well, that is kind of re-ringing the bell. So you had a dream, it was a nightmare, and now you're reliving that nightmare by continually thinking about it and like reprocessing it over and over again. And really, for me, like instead of thinking about the trauma and the effect of the is actually just being neutral to it and being like, okay, yeah, that happened, you know, but it's okay, you know, I'm processing it, I'm letting it go. So letting it go is actually not re-ringing the bell. It's like using the trauma and transforming it into like a different way. So you could do that with any of the dream content, but clearly some dream content you want, you know, it's like a positive experience. You're like, yeah, I want to relive that, you know? So you can use that as like associated ringing of that bell again. So like if you think positively, then you're activating positive aspects of your brain and you're re-ringing the bell, the positivity that you had in the dream, and your brain will associate to that. And you can use that as like a way to narrow down on that effect. If that makes sense, I don't know.
Kind of, yeah. I think so. I think so. But I'm kind of similar in the sense that I don't really spend a lot of time interpreting dreams now because sometimes I do. Sometimes I do. But there's a lot of processing, and I can tell, you know, anxiety dream. I don't need to interpret that. It's right there. I know exactly what's going on. But sometimes they're like, wow, that was weird. I wonder what that meant.
Yeah, definitely.
So is Project Icarus open to anybody?
Anybody can join, even underage if you want. We do have a notification in there not to share anything that's if you're underage, certain content, and you can still take part in the game, but just, you know, be mindful or we'll delete it, you know. And that's the only thing, you know, that there is kind of an agreement that you're taking place that this data is being shared in the back end, you know, but your data will be removed if we shut down the project. So we'll delete everything. So yes, but anybody is welcome to join. You don't have to be even a lucid dreamer if you don't want to be.
Okay.
If you like dreams, come join.
All right. And how do people find Project Icarus? I know it's on Discord.
The website is dreamicarus.com, and it will explain a little bit of what the community is about and the game, and then you can click on the join button in there, and it'll take you to Discord. If you don't have the app, you can use it through your browser, or you can download the app, and then you'll join right away, and then you'll be in the community. And there is like a read first section that a lot of people overlook because nobody reads, but that's where you need to read that first if you're going to partake in the dream or even learn how to lucid dream. You can still take part in that community, but we all know that you'd never followed the rules already. So,
All right. And how long has this been up and running?
I think I'm not sure when we started. I think it was last month at the beginning of last month or sometime in the previous month. But we have around 400 members now. I wouldn't say all those are active. A lot of them are passive people that just joined and then didn't do anything. But there is like a core strong community, and there's people that really care about the members and desire to build like a really actual strong community in it. And you know, so if you're interested in dreams and you're interested in like just hanging out with people that are interested in dream, there's a place for you just by itself. And then you can take part in some cool game if you really want to on the side. So
Well, I know that some of my listeners, I've heard back that the conversation you and I had at the very beginning, a long time ago, it really got them into the program and it got them into lucid dreaming there. So I know
neat.
that there's an interest
That's
in
great.
my audience. And when people, you know, you always have a couple of people who will say, oh, yeah, I love that. But they're probably representative of a lot more people.
I mean, 25% of people on, you know, based on stats have had a lucid dream once in their life. And not to say that that's, and there's a lot more people that are curious about lucid dreaming and having their first lucid dream. You would have to put some effort in. It's not like here's a pill, you know, and now you're lucid. There's no pill available that can really do that even. There are some that can help, but you still have to put some effort in. So this community is, you can put some effort in, you can get lucid. I've had a few people, they came in, they're like, I've never had a lucid dream. I've been at it for years and I don't think you could do it, And then I give them a couple techniques, and then the next day they had one, and they're like, wow, I can't believe, they're true believers in like the community now, But I was like, wow, I can't believe I did that either, like, or helped you, So there are people and there are lots of different perspectives. And if you're serious about it and you're like, yeah, I really want to like have this experience for once in my life, just make yourself known and come in and be like, yeah, I'm here to learn, teach me. People will do it. I'm in there. I'll message you. You can ping me in there. Just ping one of the devs. Be like, hey, I'm from the podcast. And I'll be like, all
Nice.
right.
All right. Okay, cool. Well, Lee, thank you for coming back to the podcast. It was great to catch up a little bit. And I'm very intrigued by what you're doing because I want answers to these questions that you couldn't answer. So, but I'll put a link for the dreamicarus.com in the show notes and video description. I'll also put a link in for your book as well.
Thanks,
Just
yeah.
double that down. Is there anything else that you're working on before we
No,
close?
that's really it for right now. That's my main focus. I
Okay.
really wanted to put a lot of effort into this and really see if I could turn it into something. And so far it's been working, So
Good, good.
I'm really focused in on it. And I appreciate you having me on here again
Oh, of
and
course.
get to talk to you.
It's been a long time, and like I told you at the beginning, I owe a debt of gratitude to you. You kind of led me on the path in a way by a suggestion that helped the podcast become what it is.
Appreciate it. Yeah,
So I'm very,
I'm
very
glad it helped.
grateful. So, all right. Well, Lee, until the next time, take care and thank you so much.
Problem. Thank you.
All right. And that's a wrap on episode 168 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are part of my YouTube audience. Now you know what's coming up next, all the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends and family and on social media. Subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the drill. But the thing is, all of this is really important. Sharing, subscribing, following, they're all free and they only take a second of your time and they really do help. Right now, putting this podcast together is a labor of love, and I do love it. And as many of you know, I'm in the process of making some changes to the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, psychedelics and consciousness, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's relationship with the sacred earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.